We're quickly going to try to get a picture of what's in our parsha. The parsha begins with a commandment to count the Jewish people. We have a tradition, it says in Kisisa, in the beginning of the parsha's Kisisa, back in the book of Shmos, that the Jews aren't to be counted directly. The Jews are only counted by each person donating something, or putting even a stone. Each person could put down a stone, and then we'll count the stones. So, right. So in the desert, each Jew gave a half a shekel, and those were counted. Jews are only to be counted for necessity, when there's a real need for it. Even this procession of counting with the machzita shekel, or in King Saul's time, every Jew took a sheep and put it in one of King Saul's sheep and put it in his corrals, and then they counted all the sheep. And here we see how wealthy King Saul was. Each soldier took a sheep in, and then they counted them. That's how they knew how many they had. Even that was only when it was a necessity. When King David wanted to count the Jewish people, and it wasn't necessary, so there was a plague among the Jewish people. So here God says we have a godly commandment to count the Jewish people, and we said either this is to see how many there are who are going to inherit the land. That's one understanding, or it's a sign of affection, how much God loves us. Counting gives, on the one hand, it gives yachas. It shows God cares for the people as a whole. But there's an aspect where the counting can sometimes be pointing to each person, and it gives also individualistic attention. Even though a large number seems to treat only the multitudes, we see how many people there are. But the actual process of counting, when you take each person by the hand, and you say, you're number one, you're number two, that also gives treatment to each person. The Levim, the Levites, weren't counted among the rest of the Jewish people. They're going to have a separate counting. The Levim are appointed on the Mishkan and on all the vessels, and they're commanded that when the Jews travel, so they'll take apart the Mishkan. The Mishkan could be deassembled and then reassembled when we camp. The Torah then commands us that each tribe should have their camp by their flag, and the way the Jews are set up, you could look in the back of the Chumash. You can see the camps. What page is it? It doesn't have a page number. Oh. So back here you see the camps. To the north, you have the tribe of Dan, Naphtali, and Asher. And the middle camp is always the one that the flag was raised, like you see in the picture. To the east, you have Yehuda. Yehuda's always leading the way. When they travel, he's the first to travel. And then Yisachar and Zvulun. To the south, you have Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. And to the west, you have Ephraim, Binyamin, and Menashe. You see the numbers by each one also. The entrance to the Mishkan was on the east. And we have a tradition that the entrance should always be on the east. The entrance to the Beis HaMikdash was from the east. And the entrance to the shuls, the Rambam still maintain the view should be from the east. Today we're not so careful about that, but there is a Tosefta that says the entrance should always be from the east. The Rambam Maimonides explains that we're always bowing to the west, in contradistinction with idol worshippers who would always bow to the east where the sun was rising. So we're always bowing to the west. That's why the Mishkan, the entrance was from the east, and as you proceed westward, it gets holier. In the Beis HaMikdash, the same thing, and ideally in a shul, also the same thing. So this arrangement, where the east is most powerful, you have Yehuda on the east, they're the leaders. You have Moshe, Aaron, and their sons, the ones who are doing the holiest jobs, they're also camped on the east. And then the entrance to the Holy of Holies, you get holier and holier as you go westward to the Holy of Holies. You guys with me? Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to see the numbers of each tribe, they're on this map. You see them? Well, the parsha recounts the numbering. And then the parsha tells us about Moshe and Aaron's children, and it only records Aaron's children. So from here we learn that Aaron's children were considered Moshe's children, because when a person teaches someone's children, it's as though he gave birth to them. So we have a concept that a person is jealous of everyone other than his son and his disciple and his student. There's a concept that when a person teaches someone, so it's as though he gave birth to him. The Gemara discusses if a person has a father who doesn't teach him anything. All he does is he gives him to eat. And he has a Rebbe who teaches him. So let's say he's walking down the street and he sees his father's about to drop his wallet into the river and his Rebbe's about to drop his wallet into the river. And he could only save one of them. One of them is going to get lost. Who should he run and save first? So the Gemara says his father brings him to this world and his Rebbe brings him to the world to come. But most of us hope to be fathers where we're also the Rebbe, where we pay for the Rebbe, or ideally we're also teaching the child. So the Gemara is discussing a situation where the father just brought him here. So the Gemara says, look, the Rebbe's continuing. He's helping him. He's bringing him to where he's got to go. But ideally, every father should also be a Rebbe. We have a mitzvah to teach our children.
So which one is supposed to
pick? Hold on. Are we supposed to, technically, if we see our friend's donkey on the road in trouble and our enemy's donkey on the road in trouble, we're supposed to help our enemy's donkey?
So these are all excellent questions. When we learn Baba Metzia, Mitzvah, we'll learn them. If we just touch here and touch there.
We're never going to learn Baba Metzia.
No, look, I'll tell you the truth. Whether we learn Baba Metzia or not, depends on how many years you stay here. I hope to be around. I hope. I don't know. Every night I pray, God, let me wake up alive tomorrow morning. So far it's worked. I don't know what it'll be tomorrow, but I'm hoping to be alive, and I'm hoping also to be here. If you guys stick around, then God willing, we'll also get the Baba Metzia. I hope so. So the Levim are given the job of watching over the holy and the holy of holies, and the Kohanim also. They're supposed to ensure that the Jews don't come close, because if they come close, then there'll be trouble, which is what happened by Korach. Korach and his men came close. They took the special pens. They said, we could be holy too. And they brought the special fires that only a Kohen, Kohen Gadol brings. And they all died. They weren't fit for it. And this is a lesson in general. People sometimes think they could jump up. They could get to the Holy of Holies. People want to learn Zohar. They don't yet know Tanakh and they want to learn Zohar. They don't know Mishnayos and they want to learn Kabbalah. And it's dangerous. People could get burnt. The Torah tells us we have to be careful. And God sets up special watches so we don't go too close. And we have the same concept by Mount Sinai. God says, watch that mountain so people don't go up, because they're going to get damaged. They're going to get killed if they go up. So over here also, part of the Kohanim and Levim's job. And part of it is a question of honoring the Beis HaMikdash, that we had watchings on Har HaBayis. What are we concerned with? Why do we have to have guards there? We had guards on the outside, the Levim, and Kohanim on the inside, and the concept is a concept of honor. Just like in the king's castle, you have guards. It's not that they're going to fight anyone. It's a question of honoring the place. We'll end with the Dvar Torah on the Parsha. The Torah recounts Korach's children. And their names are Asir, Elkanah, and Avi Asaf. Those are three of Korach's children. Those are Korach's three children.
No, I'm asking.
I don't know. I think all of his children survived, as far as I know. So, the Gemara describes how Korach's children, we have one of the psalms is a song of Korach's children, in which they sing about the gates of Zion that were sunk in the ground when the destruction of the temple took place. So Korach's children are singing about those gates sinking into the ground. And we know that Korach and his men wanted to become Kohanim, and they died. And Korach's children, they repented in the last second, and they stayed alive. And we have psalms and tehillim from them. So what are they singing about? So Tosfos quotes the following medrash. He says there was a king's maid, and there was a regular maid. So the regular maid went to the well, and she drew her water, and her bucket fell into the water. So she had a simple earthenware bucket. But she knew that her master would be very upset. They lost that bucket. So she sat by the well and started crying. And a few seconds later, the king's maid comes, and she's got her gold bucket, and she sends it down to take out water from the well. And her bucket slips also and falls into the well. So the first maid, she's happy. She starts rejoicing. So she asks her, what are you so happy about? So she says, look, for me to get someone to come down here to fetch my bucket, no one would come down to fetch my bucket. It's an earthenware bucket. But your bucket's a gold bucket. No one's going to leave it down there. Someone's going to come down and take it out. So if they take out your bucket, whoever's taking out your bucket is going to take out my bucket too. So now I'm happy and now I'll get my bucket back. So the Medrash says the same thing was Korach's children. Korach's children knew their father was stuck underground, right? His punishment was he was swallowed underground. And who was going to take him out? No one's going to take him out. But when they saw that the gates of Zion were swallowed into the ground, and God made a promise, I'll take them out. So they said, okay, if God's going to take them out, I'll take our father out as well. So Rav Shlomo Fisher said that this concept that his children represent is alluded to by their names. Asir means taken into bondage. Who was taken into bondage? Their father. Elkanah, God gave out his anger. Well, God gave out his anger, we say, on the stones, on the wood. And God slammed the gates into the ground. And the last one is Avi Asaf, my father will gather. So Avi is our father in heavens. When he will gather, when he'll gather up the gates from within the ground, he'll also gather their father, just like that maid said, whoever takes out the earthenware bucket will take out the gold bucket.